Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Time for my Kelsey's Do Good Sports Person of the Week segment, where today I will be awarding Danielle Chalminski. She is the founder of Drills Practice, which is a football-based boot camp workout program for men in the Arlington, Virginia area. The program markets itself for being a new, fun, and intense workout to improve your athleticism. Danielle is being awarded for her commitment to the health and fitness community in Arlington and throughout the DMV. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
It is a true pleasure, especially with Women's History Month around the corner. I love that I have a woman in sports joining me. So, again, honored to have you. And for those that don't know about you specifically, can you tell me what first inspired you to create the Drills Practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of different things. But first of all, I grew up playing sports. I played soccer and basketball as a kid, and I played volleyball in high school. And I remember those practices during the week were super intense workouts, and I would always be very sore the next day after every practice. And then once I graduated, I didn't feel like there were really any of the leagues that were anywhere similar to the intensity of being on an actual sports team. I joined a couple rec leagues, and I joined the flag football league, but then I started going to the gym more often, which I found to be pretty boring, to be honest. And then I started going to some more of the group fitness kind of sports-based classes. So I started going to spin classes and boxing. I got really into distance running a couple years ago and ran a marathon. I actually became a bar instructor, so I teach bar at a local studio. Because I know a lot of people, especially guys and girls alike, that just don't like running or going to a basement gym every day and are looking for a fun and intense workout that's sports-based, or maybe they miss their high school football days or whatever sport they play. A lot of people play in flag football leagues or other leagues in the area, but that's just maybe once a week, and they're not necessarily getting coached or getting better at the sport. So my idea was to take the workout culture in this area, which is pretty strong, but make it more sports-based workouts for people that want to get a better workout in that same way that they got in maybe their high school football or college football days, or people that are playing in rec leagues and just want to improve, or just people that are looking for a fun workout that's coached by professionals. I actually have a friend recently who said, "I hate running, but if you throw a ball at me, I will run sprints all day." Because there's something about
it's a cool way to do it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a much more fun and intense way, and you feel like you're getting better and you're improving, and you know the time goes by much faster when you're working out in a sports-based workout. So that was the main inspiration for a drills practice.
Yeah, I love that, especially. I mean, I love the examples you gave. I feel like that's like me. You know, sometimes I hate running, but if you give it to me in a fun way, I probably won't even realize sometimes all
Absolutely.
The fitness workout, you know, that I'm getting. And also something you touched on was that you have professional coaches a part of the program. So tell me a little bit about how were you able to bring them in to be part of the drills practice?
Yep, absolutely. So that's what I think makes drills practice unique, is that I hired a bunch of different professional football coaches in the area. Two of them are coaches at George Mason University, and two of the other ones are high school football coaches. One is actually a strength and conditioning specialist and has trained elite athletes all over the U.S. So they all have years and years of experience coaching athletes of all different levels and different positions in football. And other strength and conditioning and overall athleticism. So I think that's what makes this program very unique, is that you are going to be getting very technical feedback and be able to really improve your performance, whether it's just pure athleticism or getting better as a player or getting, you know, running crisper routes or better coverage and all those things that will make you better in a rec league, but you'll also have a lot of fun doing it.
Right, and that's what I love about it. You know, you're getting coached from these professionals, as Abby says, you're having fun as well, but I think that professionals component really says how it's different than other workouts and the fact that you have guys, obviously, who know the game, and that's what you're giving to your clientele, so I think that's fabulous. And just continuing with that, I mean, so what specifically does the workout entail? Like, what would someone be doing when they go through this workout if they were to sign up?
Yeah, so each workout is 75 minutes. It starts with a typical warm-up that you would see in a high school football practice, so a couple sprints, karaoke, the grapevine, high knees, those types of things. And then it goes into 20 minutes of strength and conditioning. So there'll be four stations. One will be doing hurdles, one is the agility ladder, and then a bunch of cone drills, and then more of the strength and conditioning. Our strength and conditioning coach will do other types of exercises like push-ups, burpees, any other types of torture things that he can think of. and then the second part will be the technical skill building drills, and that's the next 25 minutes of the workout, where everyone is going to be split into defense and offense, and the coaches will run you through lots of different exercises and drills based on that specific position, and it'll be different every week. So one week you might be doing more offensive drills, and the next week more defensive drills. And then the second part of that is bringing people together to do one-on-one running routes, so you actually get to practice what you're learning in different positions. Yeah, and then the end of the workout, every workout will end with a scrimmage, so you'll get to actually apply the skills that you've learned to a game, and then it makes it more fun at the end to keep score, and you get to know your teammates. You're going to be put into groups, and you'll really get to know your group because you're playing with them in a 7-on-7 game at the end of every practice.
Very cool.
And then one other thing that we're doing is there's actually going to be a combine-like assessment. So in the beginning of the program, at the end of the program, every player is going to be tested and measured on their 40-yard dash, their 20-yard shuttle, three cone drill, and then the long jump, so that you'll actually get the data on how well you're improving over time. So that's another unique aspect of the program.
Yeah, I think that's very unique. And, of course, with the NFL Combine starting
exactly
on Tuesday, perfect timing that you had that. And I think the analytics part of it is very cool, as you said, because I think numbers never lie. So when you can see that and you see the change, I know that is great for the people that are a part of the program. And last but not least, Danielle, can you tell people where they can go to find out more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to the website. It's www.drills-practice.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Drills Practice, or on Instagram, @DrillsPractice.
Perfect. Thanks so much, and congrats again, once again, Danielle, for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Sports Person of the Week, presented right here on Listen In with K&N on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our special guest.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with K&N, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now that time to get into the show and welcome in our special guest, Towson University head men's basketball coach, Pat Sherry. Pat, how are you?
How you doing?
I am wonderful. It's always a pleasure to have you. You know, I am a native of the DMV area, so anytime I can bring in somebody from a local school, it makes me happy.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no problem. And just, I want to run through your background just for people that might not know you or don't know you well enough. If you don't mind, I'm going to run through your introduction.
Sure.
So Pat took over Towson University men's basketball team after spending one season as an assistant coach at Pittsburgh. In his lone season, he helped the Panthers capture the Big East regular season championship with a 28-6 record. During his tenure at Pitt, he once again helped refill the talent pool for the Panthers as they added one of the top 15 recruiting classes in the country, according to ESPN.com, including two of the top 60 incoming players. Before he joined the staff at Pitt, Jerry spent two seasons as an assistant coach at Providence. Prior to his time with the Friars, he spent 3 years as an assistant coach at Rhode Island. It was during his time at URI that he gained national recognition and was named one of the top assistant coaches in the country in 2007 by HoopScoop. In 2008, FoxSports.com went on to name Sherry the top mid-major assistant in the entire nation. His recruiting classes at Rhode Island also captured the nation's attention, as his 2006 class was rated 24 in the nation by HoopScoop, along with the number 61 ranking for the Rams' 2007 group. He also served as an assistant for two seasons at the College of Charleston. While at Charleston, the Cougars posted a combined 38-19 record. In addition to that, Sherry has a great understanding of the CAA, as he spent 5 years with the league's teams, William & Mary from 2000 to 2003 and Northeastern University from 1998 to 2000. In 1996, he became the second youngest head coach in the nation at the age of 26 when he was selected to guide the Curry basketball program. During his two-year stop with the Colonels, he led Curry to its first winning season in 5 years. He also spent 1 year as an assistant at Stonehill and 3 seasons as an assistant at Tufts. In his 2 seasons, he helped direct the Jumbos to 2 ECAC tournaments, along with the school's first NCAA Division III tournament berth in 1995. So basically, Pat, you've done it all. So it's easy to see how
you made me feel old. You made me feel old right there, you know.
It's great that you've been in it so long. And, I mean, I just, drawing from all your previous experience as a coach, how have you been able to kind of navigate that into your current role with Towson University?
Well, I think I've been fortunate to work for some really good head coaches and athletic directors. And then I'm fortunate to work with some excellent assistant coaches, the director of operations. And I always feel like you take something from everyone.
Right.
And this is one of these, you know, businesses where you, like most businesses, you constantly got to try to figure out how to get better and how to improve. I don't think there's ever a, you know, we want the perfect game, the perfect program. That's probably not going to happen, but that's what you're shooting for.
Right. And I think all that experience only helps. I love that you said, you know, you worked under so many great head coaches, but I don't know if people know, but you're also a former college basketball player. You played at Tufts from 1989 to 1992. So has that at all helped you to better connect with the players that you're currently coaching at Towson University?
Well, I think you have an understanding of what they go through as a student athlete.
Right.
It's been a long time since I played. I certainly was a lot faster when I played than I am now. But, you know, I was a point guard that wasn't much of a scorer, but took great pride in defense and the ability to distribute the ball. So I think for me, I've always been a defensive-minded coach first and foremost, and that's just something because I always tell our players that takes effort and it takes concentration. It doesn't take a whole lot of talent.
Right. And I think that's huge. And, of course, because when a player can connect with you and the fact that you've been in their shoes, I know that speaks volumes, of course, because, you know, you're not only talking the talk, you've actually walked the walk. But now I want to get further into your background, and I want to talk about you when you first started. So, I mean, Coach, growing up in Medford, Massachusetts, I mean, where did your love first begin for basketball?
You know what? Medford's about 5 miles from the downtown Boston, so mm-hmm. – I grew up a hockey player. I tell people all the time I played with two pros growing up, Joe and David Sacco. They both played in the NHL.
Wow. Yeah.
And I thought I was a pretty good hockey player until I realized those guys are really good. Maybe I was just carrying their bags for them. And I started playing basketball and really probably seriously around fifth, sixth grade, and kind of fell in love with it. You know, and just, you know, kind of maybe more so because that was my thing. I think maybe hockey, I was playing with really good players. But I was proverbial gym rat. A lot of people know this. I was cut from my freshman team in high school.
Oh, wow.
And it was probably the best experience. You know, like a lot of us, probably I thought unfairly. It forced me to work hard. I played in men's leagues, open gyms the entire year. I would do my homework on the way home from school, knock it out, and be the first one in the gym and the last one to leave every night, just trying to get in the games. And really, you know, motivated me. I ended up making and starting on the varsity the next year. So
wow.
It was a big swing. It certainly taught me about a little bit of perseverance and being tougher. And And I just, like I said, I've been fortunate. I've never had a real job. This is a true story. When I graduated from Tufts, I got my undergrad in psychology and was trying to figure what I wanted to do. My mom had got me a job at an international educational firm in Boston. And I showed up to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, I decided this wasn't for me. I played a lottery ticket. I won $424.
Uh-huh.
Thought I was ready to retire. That carried me for about a month, and then I became a volunteer at Tufts University. My first year coaching from Bob Sheldon, who's still the coach there, he paid me $300,
mm-hmm.
and I substitute taught. I refereed soccer, basketball, got my bartending license, and just kind of tried to survive it. So it's you know, this isn't for everyone, but I think it's you know, you're fortunate when you get to show up every day and work with student athletes.
Right, and I love your story that you just said, oh my gosh, one lucky lottery ticket. I mean, it seems like it kind of changed the course.
I wish there was a little more.
Right.
<you know?
laughs> Then you could have really retired, right?
That's right.
That is wonderful. But, of course, at a young age, $400 is a lot to, I think, all of us. But, you know, I just love that story and how you got into coaching. And also, you and your wife, Kristen, you guys have two sons, Ryan and Owen. So I'm just curious, I mean, are they at all interested in playing basketball as well and kind of following in your shoes?
Yeah, my oldest son, Ryan, is, he loves it. He's kind of got into it on his own. We never tried to push him into it. And so he's a lot better shooter than I was. So we'll see as he continues to work. Hopefully, I'll tell you, if there's any NBA guys listening, he's a heck of a GM. He knows everything about the NBA, so hopefully that's
a
fact
cool.
He wants to follow. Yep.
Very cool. So maybe one day he will be over a team, which would be very cool to see, especially with your connections in basketball. But now I want to switch over to your hobbies. And I know one thing that you really play an important part in is your work with autism awareness and really getting that message spread across college basketball. You started the Coaches Powering Forward with USF staffer Tom Herron. And sorry if I said his name wrong. But, I mean, tell me a little bit more about Coaches Powering Forward and why you started it.
Yeah, you know, my youngest son, Owen, is on the autism spectrum, and we have unbelievable services here in the Towson area, and we had done a couple events with Autism Speaks. I started wearing their blue puzzle piece on my lapel, and people would ask me what it was, a lot of games, and we did like a little local event on our campus the first year. It was really well received, so then Tom and I just figured out, you know, he has a son that's on the spectrum as well, and we decided to try to ask coaches, like on a weekend in February, to start wearing the pins. We partnered up with Autism Speak and the National Association of Basketball Coaches. It's been really cool to, you know, we've done it for five or six years now. And
right.
We had, I think, about 500 schools participate this year and see all the games on TV. So it's been fun to watch it grow. And the most important piece about it is to try to raise awareness. So hopefully someday it'll be an autism acceptance game. But right now we're just still trying to raise awareness. It's, you know, it's the world's largest developmental disorder.
Wow.
There is no cure for it. It affects 1 in 68 children.
Right.
And really the big piece behind it, the average family, it costs them about $60,000 to get the proper services they need, and we all know that not a lot of families have that, and that's
right.
What really kind of tugs at our heartstrings behind trying to, you know, get the games weekends going.
Right. That is wonderful. I mean, and just tell me a little bit more about, you know, what role then do you think sports can specifically play with autism awareness to really help, you know, try to help those families?
Yeah, I think when you see, for us on the basketball side, when you see, a Coach Calipari or a Coach K wearing that pin, you know, people are going to learn a little bit about autism. You know, I think there's ways that we could do more with sports with it. You know, the NBA does some stuff in April, you'll see, which is great. So, I also always tell people coaches sometimes get a bad rap, but, you know, you only hear about the negative stuff. We've found all our colleagues to be unbelievable when we've asked them to do certain things for it. So we're really appreciative of that.
Yeah, that's tremendous. I look forward, of course, to supporting that cause, and I'm so glad so many coaches have. And now I just want to kind of switch bases to really talk to you about you as a person off the court. So off the basketball court, I mean, how would you kind of describe yourself, and what do you enjoy doing?
You know what? You know, when you step between the line, it's intense, and it's how do we get better so that we, you know, how do we win? How do we compete? Off the floor, I wouldn't say I have a lot of hobbies. I'm home with my family because I think the job takes a lot out of you, and it's certainly not an easy profession. I think, speaking for a lot of coaches, especially in college, one of the guilts I know I have is that, you know, sometimes I'm away, and my wife was really the real champion and head coach of our family, carries the torch, so to speak. So, you know, when I'm not a golfer or guys weekends or anything like that, I like to be home and do stuff with the family, mostly, you know, because I think that the job takes a lot out of you for that, and I think it's any chance you get to spend time with family is the most important thing.
Right, well said, and I know, you know, how important your family is to you, and now that takes me to I want to talk more about the history and culture of the Towson University men's basketball program, because from the outside looking in, it seems like you really have created that family as well with the team. And for those that don't know about Towson University's program, when you first took over the program, Towson was in the midst of a 41-game losing streak. Towson was 1-31 your first year in 2011 to 2012, and then the following year, they won 18 games, which became the greatest single-season turnaround in NCAA Division I history, which is tremendous. And then Towson has won 20 or more games three times in the last 4 years, which is also huge with you coming on, and competed in two postseason tournaments in the College Insider Tournament in 2014 and then Vegas 16 in 2016. And then, last but not least, Towson advanced to the CAA semifinals twice under your coaching. So just kind of tell me, man, how did you go in and kind of change the whole culture of this program?
You know, that's taken a lot of work by everyone. I've had really good people on staff. You know, a couple guys have been with me a long time, and Kevin Clark and Pat O'Connell. And I've had quite a few other guys move on to climb the food chain. I've had seven or eight different guys climb to the highest level, and that's helped. And I've had good administrators. I've got an excellent president. I've got a great AD. Mm-hmm. And then we've had good student athletes. Make no mistake about that. I think as a coach, what we've tried to do is hopefully change some habits and then develop a culture and, you know, kind of give guys a roadmap of what we think will be, you know, make them successful student athletes. Now, it's not for everybody.
Right.
I think the guys, though, that have fallen, that have had success. You know, once I said this earlier, now as a coach, you know, we've been a little bit inconsistent this year. We've had very high expectations. So right now I'm kicking the tires, figuring out, you know, why we're not better right now. And we've got a big weekend ahead to really cash in and a huge opportunity. So it's, you know, this is a what have you done for me lately profession, you know, keenly
right.
aware of that. And you know, that's what the next step is. How do we kick the door in here and go dancing?
Right. And, you know, I wish you luck, and you have a big weekend ahead. But now, just staying on the season, I kind of want to put the season in review. You guys finished 18-13 overall and 8-10 in the CAA. So overall, just what were your thoughts on this season and the squad that you had?
Well, we had a tremendous start, best start in school history, and we've won the most neutral games in the country. We won two preseason tournaments. And then we've been very inconsistent in conference play. There's no other way to describe that. And we've lost a lot of close games, which, you know, it's got me trying to figure out how to do my job better, because really over the last 3 or 4 years before that, we've won a lot of those games. And we just figured out ways to, whether it was a guy throwing a half court shot, or we lost a couple at the foul line. One day we committed a silly mental error. So this time of year is, how do you kind of learn from those experiences and draw from the experiences we had in winning neutral tournaments, which is what our conference
right.
tournament is, and make sure guys are, you know, really locked in, like we've been telling them, to mentally prepare to win a one or two possession game, because that's really what, you know, conference tournament and arguably the premier mid-major conference in the country, that's what it's going to come down to. And our guys are aware of that, and they want to do it. And it's, you know, it's myself and my staff's job to kind of, you know, make sure that happens.
Right, right. And, of course, that's always the goal. And, you know, I mean, I know you do have a big weekend looking ahead, but before we get there, I do want to talk about your last regular season game, which, I mean, you had a player in Zane Martin score a career-high 36 points for Towson University, even though you guys did end up losing a close game, which you alluded to earlier, 91-86 to Hofstra in the CAA. I mean, but just kind of talk about Zane Martin as a player, you know, and how it's been to see him grow this year.
Yeah, he's had an unbelievable sophomore year. He really came on for us as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy we had targeted early. Got a commitment from him early, you know, at a great, great Catholic League basketball up at Philadelphia. Newman Garetti,
mm-hmm.
Kyle Arrigale does an unbelievable job there. We had Johnny Davis, who is now playing professionally in Australia, who's our school's all-time winningest player from the same high school. And him and Zane were friends. And, you know, Zane's had an all-conference, in my opinion, first-team all-conference season.
Mm-hmm.
And has a chance to, you know, with another big jump next year to, you know, potentially be as good a player as we've had at Towson, you know, whether that's Jarrell mm-hmm. Betterman, Gary Neal, you know, Kirk Lee, he's got a chance to do that. And he's competitive and he's talented and he likes the moment. Those are three pretty good qualities.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been amazing to see playing in that last game. I mean, what a tremendous effort by him. And somebody else that also really played well in your last regular season game was Justin Gorham, who had 20 points and 12 rebounds for his second straight double-double. So tell me a little bit about him and how you've seen him grow and how he's played this season.
Yeah, it's a really terrific 1-2 punch for sophomores. And Justin's someone you could argue has been playing out of position this year. And when he slides to the power forward spot permanently, there's no doubt in my mind he's ready to make that jump to a
mm-hmm.
you know, potential first-team all-league guy. He's gifted. He's got a motor. He's relentless. And they're both emerging leaders, which we're going to need moving forward.
Right.
And Justin is still the youngest guy in our program age-wise. So
right.
his upside is really, really high.
Yeah, that's exciting to know he's so young and so talented so early. And you have such a talented team. And a name that the Towson Tigers fans should know very well, Mike Morsell, who became the seventh player in program history to score 1,500 points. Just talk about him overall as a person and as a player.
Well, he's been a great kid to have. He comes from St. John's
mm-hmm.
High School, which is a great, great high school program. And
right, a lot of good players
plays
there.
Yeah, a lot of good play. Played for a high-level AAU team in D.C. Premier and comes from a great family. And Mike's had a really good career here at Towson.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all the record books and a lot of wins, and, you know, I think, you know, more than anything, we would love to send him out as a champion next week. And,
right.
You know, I believe he'll be locked into that because when he's engaged he becomes a very, very difficult cover at our level.
Right, which is just huge. And it's been amazing as well to see him grow, of course, especially as a local kid from the area, to see him excel so well at Towson. And as you said, I'm sure he wants a great send-off, and I know your team wants that for him. But looking at this year's team, Coach, I mean, how would you overall compare this year's team to your team last season? And, you know, how do you think that'll kind of change as you look ahead to the tournament coming up and with how they'll do?
Well, you know, ultimately, you know, next weekend will really tell you what kind of year we had. You know, as they say, what pressure makes diamonds or burst pipes. So that's what we're going to find out next weekend. You know, last year, group started slow and then really, really came on and had an unbelievable year. This group can still put the proverbial cherry on top of the sundae, but you know, because we had such a great start and high expectations, we
right.
do need to do that next weekend in order for us to get where we all believe we can get to. The reality is that, you know, it's going to come down to three games in an
mm-hmm.
ultra-competitive mid-major conference, but we've got great respect for our opponents and
right.
kind of, you know, what we need to do. But the reality is it's also like we've got to play – the right way. And if we play the right way, we've got a chance to be very good.
Right, and the tournament coming up. And I know the Towson fans are very excited to watch you with the upcoming tournament. But now I kind of want to talk more about this team. And I feel like every team kind of has an identity. And I'm sure each year the team's identity changes under you. So overall, how would you describe this team's identity this season?
Well, you know, they're a group that really likes each other. It's kind of a fun-loving, goofy group that's ultra-competitive. But, you know, like any group, we've got some warts that, you know, I think when we've managed those, we've been better. But it's, you know, I think the trademark of this group is its competitiveness. The hindrance sometimes is how do we channel that competitiveness and not lose focus.
Right, as you look ahead. And I like that, though, because I don't think everybody, if you've been on a basketball team, sometimes not everybody does like each other, but it seems like there is a genuine like with your team, and I'm sure they're on the court that helps them, of course, to play better, of course, when, you know, you just get along with the guy next to you, and I think that speaks volumes. But another thing about you that people might not know with you as a coach is your commitment to academics. I mean, since you've started there, and I saw that for your whole career, I mean, you've had high graduation rates. Since you became Towson's head coach, I just kind of want to hear from you. I mean, why is players earning their degree while they're at Towson? Why is that so important to you?
Well, one, it's obviously it's the most important thing. My job is to win basketball games, graduate guys, and hopefully turn out productive members of society.
Right.
You know, and like I said, it's not necessarily for everybody. And, you know, and it's not easy for everybody to do that all the time. But these guys, the getting the degree, and hopefully all my seniors are listening because they're all within striking distance and they've all heard this a lot from me. You have to get your degree, and you know, because basketball is going to end at some point. Now,
Right. What
I'm really thankful for is my university has really made a great commitment to academics. I have an unbelievable learning specialist named Dixie Wingler, who does a great job with our guys. And, you know, it's once again, we talk about giving guys that roadmap.
Right.
And if they'll follow it, you know, there is a plan in place where it's worked for other guys. So, you know, that's not without its, you know, constant daily battles. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get these guys out the door as college graduates.
Right, and I love that commitment to it because, as you said, basketball will end someday, and you always want to have that degree. You're going to school, so you want to get that degree so they can also succeed off the court in the future. So I love that you have a strong commitment to that, and you really remember that it's student-athlete and that the student part comes first. But now I want to get to the fun part and talk about the upcoming CAA tournament where you guys will face off. Well, it begins Saturday in North Charleston, South Carolina, but on Sunday, March 4th at 2:30 p.m., you guys will enter the tournament as the number 5 seed and open against the number 4 seed William & Mary. That is a team that you know very well. You guys beat them twice already this season. Now this will be your third meeting between the Tribe and you all, but I'm just kind of curious, as you look ahead to William & Mary again, you guys did beat them twice this season. I mean, what are you kind of telling your team going into this game so you hopefully get that win in the tournament?
Well, yeah, we've got to prepare for what we know is an unbelievable offensive team in William & Mary. And that, you know, some things we did well against them can help us again, but then there's certainly some other things that we've also got to worry about ourselves to make sure we do that at a high level. You know, it's going to be a hard-fought game, and we got to play well to win. I'm going to sound like a cliche, but that's the reality. And if you can get one, then you're playing on national TV the next night in the semifinals.
Right, and that's huge. And, I mean, against them, it seems like you guys have had success, so it seems like you know this team pretty well. You shot 61% in your first two games against William and Mary, and then you won both regular season matchups by rallying from double-digit deficits in both games. So I understand when you've played them previously, you guys had to come from behind. But what do you kind of want to tell your team maybe about, instead of playing from behind, kind of controlling the game and playing with the lead?
Yeah, there's no question we'd love to get off to a great start. You know, I think the other piece is when you're playing against a good club like William & Mary, that they're the number one three-point shooting team in the country.
Right.
You know, when they start making some shots, you've got to make sure you continue to get good shots and you don't turn the ball over, because you don't want, you know, things to snowball and magnify, because, you know, they can run off 10, 12 points on you in a hurry.
Right, and, of course, that can change everything. And, again, I think it's always easier, of course, when you don't have to come back from behind. Even though you guys have proven that you are a team that can do it. But I know tournament time, it's a whole, you know, different mindset. So I wish you guys luck in the CAA tournament. But before we end with the tournament talk, I want to ask you, I mean, overall, what were your favorite memories of this basketball season?
Well, hopefully this weekend, you know. That's what I'm hoping for. But certainly winning the Belfast Classic over Northern Ireland was an unbelievable experience for us on national TV and in the manner in which we won it.
Right.
And then winning the Gulf Coast Showcase down in Florida over three really good teams. So we've got some good memories, but we'd like to kind of get that triple crown of memories, you know?
Right, right. And, of course, it starts with defeating William & Mary. I know you guys will have your hands full of Justin Pierce, who, of course, is the Tribe's top performer against Towson, where he averages 21.5 points against the Towson Tigers. And, of course, David Cohen, who averages 18.5 points. So I know you're a defensive-minded coach, but just kind of have to contain those two big scores. I mean, have you told your team anything specifically? I mean, are you going to double them? Are you, you know, what are you kind of thinking to limit them against your Tigers this weekend?
Yeah, they're really hard to stop. We've had, like, in both games, two, like, good halves against them, but
mm-hmm.
it's been hard to guard them for a full game. You know, maybe
right.
we could give them the wrong starting time. Maybe they showed up late. That might help us. That might
always good, right?
Always good. But honestly, it starts with them. The big kid, Nathan Knight, I think, is a pro prospect.
Yes.
And then they put four guys on the floor that can really, really shoot threes. So, you know, how do we take away the three-point shot? That'll be the biggest key, in my opinion, going into the game.
Right, the keys to the game. Wow. Well, now I want to switch over to something kind of more local, Coach, and I want to go to my Kelsey's Are You Serious Right Now segment, where there's been a lot of talk about Prince George's County zoning change for athletes. So if people did not hear this news, Prince George's County Public Schools will institute a rule prohibiting incoming transfer students from participating in athletics for 1 year. The rule will go into effect on March 1st and apply to students transferring for the 2018 to 2019 school year from either inside or outside the county. It reflects the county's desire to reinforce that academics should be the priority in transfer decisions. PGCPS Communications Officer Raven Hill said, there is an exception, though, for private school students transferring into their boundary school. So Montgomery County and Howard County have similar guidelines for transfers. And some people are like, well, where is this coming from? But students can apply for waivers to appeal the year of ineligibility for in Montgomery County, and transfers in Prince George's County will also have that option. So that is important to know. So Prince George's County students who wish to move from their neighborhood schools to another in the county are allowed to submit transfer requests as part of the county's open student transfer season. Only schools that are under-enrolled can accept new students. So that is very important to note. Only schools that are under-enrolled can accept new students. And a lot of this talk has actually come from, of course, in PG County, a lot of the same teams are winning. So some people at Wise High School are actually saying it's unfair because a lot of people have pointed the fingers at Wise. They've won three consecutive football state championships, and their boys team has an 18-4 record this season, and they're a contender for the state title. So, of course, they're kind of saying they don't think the rule is fair at all. They, on their basketball team this season, they actually have four transfers, including incoming guards that are coming over from Bladensburg and Crossland, and they were actually the team's leading scorers. So I'm just curious to hear from you, Coach. Of course, I know you scout locally in the counties in Maryland. What do you kind of think about this new rule, and how do you think it will affect athletics overall in Prince George's County?
So everyone, other than, like, appeals, they want to have to sit out a year?
Right. So it seems right. So now the new rule from March 1st, they will have to sit out a year before they can play for their new transfer team.
Yeah, I just would say that, you know, obviously people probably worried about recruiting, tampering. We face the same thing in college.
Right.
You know, the only difference is that college, they get an extra year when they have a year in residency, and
right.
it actually helps
yeah,
them towards graduation. So I'd hate to see kids lose a year of participation, because I think, you know, a lot of times academic success is tied to their athletic success and some of the discipline mm-hmm. that comes with that.
Right.
But, you know, that's a tough job, too, evaluating. So, you know, I don't know what the appeals process looks like. Hopefully it's something that's open-minded and takes into, you know, all type of family decisions and all that good stuff, because
right.
I do think every transfer case is different. I'm not sure you can, you know, kind of just square peg everyone saying this. I don't think it's as simple as that either.
Right. And I will say, like, opponents of this decision are saying that it seems like to them that it's unfairly targeting athletes. So I'm just curious if you kind of agree with that point at all.
Well, you know, let's be honest, you never hear about someone in the band transferring, or if there's an issue on a campus, it's, you know, it's usually going to be your athletes. So, you know, sports brings, you know, good positive visibility most of the time to, you know, high schools and colleges. So, you know, I just, like I said, I'd hate to see kids unfairly penalized. I understand the intent of the rule. I'd be a little bit concerned about how it's going to actually be executed and who's affected by it.
Right. It'll be interesting to follow this story. Wise's coach, Rob Garner, actually said that instead of that, he suggested that an end to the open student transfer system entirely would be more effective, he feels, than the new rule, because he does think that it's unfair. So I'll just point that out. But as I said, you know, Prince George's County, they've been known for a long time for their athletics. So this new transfer rule, I think it will hurt some programs. But as you said, I think every program, you know, in every situation for student transferring is different. So hopefully when they get the appeals, they'll look at each one, you know, with an open heart. Try to understand fully why that family or that student is trying to transfer. But now, Coach, I'd like to end every show with my Woman Crush Everyday segment, where today I'd like to honor Melissa Harville LeBron. And now, if people have not heard that name, I don't know how, just because her name's been everywhere this past week, basically because she is making history as the first African-American woman to own a race car team licensed by NASCAR. And I love her story because she's a 47-year-old single mother. She was raising her three biological children, as well as her siblings' four kids. She actually started her career in the entertainment industry as an intern at Sony Music, and then in 2005, she launched her own music label while working for New York City's Department of Correction Office. Then nearly a decade later, she suffered from a severe asthma attack that forced her into early retirement and inspired her to take a risk of launching a multifaceted entertainment company called WM Stone Enterprises, Inc. in 2014. And then she says her journey into auto racing began unexpectedly when she took her sons to a NASCAR experience event at the Charlotte Super Speedway in hopes of deterring them from taking up such a dangerous hobby. But instead, the experience only made her sons' interest pique more and eventually led to her investing hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop her own team. She created E2 Northeast Motorsports under the umbrella of WM Stone Enterprises, Inc. The E2 Northeast Motorsports team became the first multicultural team to race competitively in NASCAR with four African-American and Latino drivers. So, Coach, what do you overall think about this news of Melissa, you know, really making history in NASCAR?
Well, one, congratulations to her. I mean, she epitomizes toughness and work ethic. And obviously glad she got that opportunity. Wish she got that earlier, you know, because I'm sure she deserved a lot earlier, but sometimes progress and change is too slow in our country. But, you know, it's certainly an inspirational story for, you know, when people feel like the deck is stacked against them, you can, you know, reference what she's done. So I'd like to meet her because she sounds like a true champion.
Yes, I mean, it's just amazing. That's why I had to honor her. And it sounds like Melissa has an open invitation to Towson University, so who knows? Maybe she'll be cheering you guys on this season. But just truly, I mean, a story. And I love her story, especially. She was a single mom raising her own three kids plus her siblings' four kids. So it just shows, you know, nothing can stop you. She had a goal. She got through a severe asthma attack, you know, really turned her son's hobby into something that she loved and actually created a race car team for them to compete in. So I think it just also talks about a woman's love for her kids. So I just love her overall story, and congratulations once again to her. But, Coach, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Listen In with K&N. I had fun with you, and we got to talk about some cool stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Keep up the great work.
No problem. Thanks so much. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.